Remarks of the President, Decatur, Illinois, 1 November 1952.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. I certainly do appreciate this most cordial welcome. It's a great pleasure indeed to be back here in Decatur. I'm on my way home today. This may be the last time I'll be seeing you as President of the United States. For the past 7 years that I've been President, the world has been passing through a very, very critical period. Once again, we face the worldwide threat of aggression. The policy of this country is to build the strength of the free world to meet that threat. And we are meeting the communist challenge and hurling it back. In June 1950, the leaders of the Kremlin directed aggression against Korea in one of the most brutal attacks in the history of the world. The free world stopped that aggression in Korea, and I'm proud of what our soldiers have done there. Our soldiers are fighting in Korea, so we won't have to fight in Denver or Detroit or Decatur. I resent the efforts of the Republican candidates who try to say that our men in Korea are fighting a useless war. They are fighting to protect our own safety and freedom and to prevent an atomic war. When the Republican candidate for president was here in Decatur a few weeks ago, he promised to eliminate our losses in Korea, and he promised to avoid future Koreas. He said the battle line today should be manned primarily by South Koreans. Now, what do you suppose our fighting men over in Korea think of these speeches the general has been making? I'll tell you. I have here an article from yesterday's New York Times, a paper that favors the Republican candidate. This article was written by a reporter at the fighting front out in Korea, and here's what it says, and I quote, "In an informal sampling of American soldiers fighting in Korea, it was revealed that with surprising unanimity, they disapproved of any plan that would take United States troops off the front line, officers and enlisted men alike, all of whom now are actively engaged in the fighting, feel any such withdrawal would be disastrous. All of those who were questioned shared the view that United States divisions must remain on the front for the present. We can't get out now. It wouldn't work," said Sergeant James Chateau of Purdon, Mississippi. "It would just mean that we'd be making another landing in Pusan within a few weeks," said Corporal Harvey D. Jones of Crumpler, West Virginia. He observed that since this was a United States nation's war, the United States was obliged to share in the fighting and not remain in the rear and let the others do the dirty work. I want you to understand that these men did not mean any slur against the valor of our South Korean allies who are fighting side by side with them. This article goes on to say that all our men, and I quote, expressed great admiration for the fighting capabilities of their Korean allies. Nevertheless, all the Americans questioned felt that Koreans were not yet ready to assume full responsibility for holding the line against a tough, aggressive Chinese foe. Now, these men are right. That's what makes the Republican candidate's statements about South Korean troops so ill-advised. He talks as though we were not already doing all we could to use South Koreans. Actually, there is now in a South Korean army of 400,000 men. We have built up from scratch in just 2 years. We are increasing it just as fast as we can, but it takes a lot of time and training to make a good modern army. Just as these men say, the South Korean forces are not ready yet to take on the whole job alone. Now, the Republican candidate for president ought to know this as well as I do. The generals who are guiding our effort in Korea are his old comrades in arms. He has available to him plenty of good information as to what goes on there. There is no excuse for him to be inaccurate about it. Now, there's one thing more in this New York Times story I wanted to read to you. It says, and I quote, "A great majority of the soldiers could not understand what benefit could result from a personal visit by General Eisenhower to Korea if he were elected president." Now, this is an article that's written on the front. I'm still quoting from this article, and it's written for the New York Times, which is for Eisenhower. Most of the interviewed were puzzled by rather than opposed to the Eisenhower visit. They could not see what General Eisenhower would accomplish if he were to come here personally, and were worried that he might come, settle nothing, and leave the United States prestige and bargaining positions considerably weakened by a fruitless visit. The officers interviewed, all of junior rank, also were outspoken in ascribing Eisenhower's proposal to political motives. They were right, too. I read you this article so you would know what the men who were doing the fighting think of the statements on Korea, which the Republican candidate for president has been making so widely and loosely these days. I urge you to contrast the general's statements with what your own great governor has been saying in his capacity as Democratic nominee for president. He's made no easy promises. He's held out no false hopes. He has been honest and direct and clear-minded about this whole problem. He has been as honest with you as he is with himself. My friends, the contrast between these two men on this vital issue is a good example of the difference in the way they have approached all the great issues in this campaign. It is a good illustration of why the voters of this country should reject the professional soldier in his bid for the highest civilian office in the land and vote instead for an experienced, wise civilian leader, Adlai Stevenson of Illinois. The only reason I've been going up and down the country laying out the facts and the issues to the people is because I want them to do a little thinking for themselves. I want them to think about the welfare of the free world, and that's ourselves and our allies. I want them to think about the welfare of this great country of ours, whose whole existence is at stake if something goes wrong. Then I want you to think about your own situation. Back here in Danville, I read a 20-year-ago column from the Danville paper, which hates me like the devil hates holy water. It quoted accidentally alongside a column where it said there ought to be a change in Washington. It said that this day, October the 26th, that was, on the Chicago market in 1932, wheat reached an all-time low of 44 cents a bushel. And what the paper was saying in the other column was, let's go back to that. Well, they didn't like it very well when I got through with what I was saying. That's what I want you to think about. I want you to think about your own condition. How are you fixed? How were you fixed when these Republicans had control of the government? How are you fixed now? If you give those things thought and remember that all we are working for is to maintain the prosperity of this great nation and to maintain peace in the war and keep the world from going into an atomic war which would destroy us all. Then you can go to the polls and I know you'll vote for what's right. You'll vote for Dave Beggs of Decatur for Congress. You'll elect Dixon for governor and you'll send Adlai Stevenson to the White House and we'll have four more years of good government.